Sometimes your life's work can be about continuing someone else's dream.
This is a monument, as far as I'm concerned, a living monument to a guy who had a terrific idea.
We'll meet a woman who's taken over a vineyard as a tribute to her husband, plus a California clinic that's helping alleviate suffering for free. I'm Susan Barnett, and it's coming up on 51%, The Women's Perspective. Few of us get through a lifetime without heartache, heartbreak, and challenges. But as the Greek Stoic philosopher Epictetus said, it is difficulties that show what men are. Phyllis Fader took over the Clinton Vineyards in New York's Hudson Valley after the death of her husband Ben in 2009. Ben's vision was a small, quality vineyard that would produce wines to rival the wines he loved from France. Phyllis has maintained and grown Clinton Vineyards, learning about the business and nurturing it as a tribute to her late husband.
This vineyard began really because of Ben's passion for making wine, and also because, and the whole nature of this place is really also based on the fact that he was a Francophile. And so he wanted, for one thing, to specialize in growing only one grape, the way a lot of the premium small estates in France do. And he was really seeing this as something that represented himself in a very personal way. So when he died, as I said at his memorial service, my husband died, but he's not dead, because I wanted to continue on in his footsteps with his legacy intact. And so that's what I've dedicated myself to doing.
But that had to be a tremendous learning curve.
Yes, and there. Luckily I have good people. There's a man who has been working with us now for 8 years, and Ben taught him everything about the winemaking, and so that was a very good thing. And then through contacts in this business, I was able to get someone to work with me on the growing end, because one of the major steps I took the growing season after Ben's death was I planted 800 new vines, and then went from there to really upgrade the entire vineyard operation. And that was not was, it's an ongoing process, and it is very interesting. Some days incredibly challenging vis-a-vis being able to get the right helpers and, you know, to schedule everything to deal with weather. And I mean, it's freezing today. Here I am with all these beautiful trees in bloom, and it's freezing. And we just, you know, we were keeping our fingers crossed that we don't get some horrible frost, because we've already had bud break. So listen, in a million years, I never would have thought I'd become a farmer. I spent a lot of years, most productive, exciting, wonderful years, in the graphic design world, working for a very famous American graphic design studio in New York City called Pushpin Studios. And it really just changed my life because, well, for example, my first big assignment for them was to orchestrate putting together a two-month retrospective show at the Louvre. We were the first American graphic design studio invited to exhibit at the Louvre. And the show then traveled around the world, and I organized that.
And did you come along on this vineyard experience enthusiastically, or just with a tolerance for his desire to do it? Did you have any interest?
No. I was excited about it from the start. And my husband was excited that I cared. And then when he saw me really jumping in and working with him on the bottling line and helping before harvest to put the lugs out into the vineyard. I mean, he really adored that I took to this with such enthusiasm. It was fun. We had a great experience that was very challenging when Bill Clinton was the nominee in 1992. The Democratic Convention was in New York City. And I received a telephone call from a man who was then our distributor. And he said, "Oh, Phyllis, is your Sauval Blanc table wine bottled?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, I'm sending my men up tomorrow. We need 300 cases. What I didn't tell him was that the wine was bottled but not labeled.
Uh-oh.
And so Ben came up that evening. The two of us did this ourselves, and we worked all night. We have had a wonderful relationship with the Clintons starting in that time that we had our wines at the in New York City when the convention, Democratic Convention, was in town. And then we released a wine called Victory White when the president was elected. And then again in 1996, we re-released Victory White. And we're going to release it again for Hillary. So I'm still holding some bottles aside, just in case. But one of the lovely things that happened with us that really got us out there in terms of the internet was that when Chelsea Clinton was married up here near Rhinebeck, they put together a lovely gift selection for each of the guests at the wedding. And they chose my wine, along with other wonderfully delicious local things. And that year, the label on the wine is called Tribute. Originally, it was done to honor 9/11 because we harvested our grapes on 9/11. And on this occasion, it was called Tribute in honor of Ben, my husband. And for the first time, I did a back label, which told all about Ben.
So once you were doing this alone, Phyllis, did it feel like there was a certain challenge to try to maintain and improve something that someone you loved so much? That had to be a great deal
absolutely.
Of pressure.
Absolutely. And the whole concept of, you know, see, Ben is very present here in so many, many ways. I mean, I'm sitting in a room now looking at beautiful paintings that he did in Mexico, where we used to go in the winter when our driveway was totally iced over and nobody could get here. We took our vacation. And so from the paintings and the sculptures and all the things that Ben did within these walls and in the winery, I mean, this is a monument, as far as I'm concerned, a living monument to a guy who had a terrific idea. And so my desire is not to compromise in any way, because he wouldn't.
And what has been your experience as a woman running a winery?
You know, historically, women have taken on such responsibility over the centuries. I mean, Madame Veuve Clicquot, to whom I would love to be compared, did it on a much bigger scale than I, but she and I share a passion for champagne, and when she was asked when she likes to drink champagne, she said all the time, and I agree with that. But so there has been a historical precedent for women in the United States and abroad taking on and running with family businesses. I have been serving on the board of directors of the New York Wine and Grape Foundation, and I am proud to tell you that I was the first woman to be chairman of that board, and that was quite an honor.
What is your ultimate goal for the Clinton Vineyards?
My ultimate goal is to live a healthy life until I'm about 90 and continue to make wonderful wine and to have recognition for the fact that what we make, what we have in our portfolio is rather unique because we grow one grape, which is Sauvignon Blanc. It is not a vinifera. It's a French-American hybrid grape. We make wonderful champagne. We make table wine, and we have a portfolio of extraordinary dessert wines that includes cassis, and it's the only cassis made in the United States, I believe, that has won gold medals in international competition.
Phyllis Fader is the owner of Clinton Vineyards in New York's Hudson Valley. Find out more at clintonvineyards.com. Coming up, a clinic in California that offers free treatments for cancer patients, and a woman whose devotion to peace won her a Nobel Prize and social ostracism. If you missed part of this show or want to hear it again, visit the 51% archives at WAMC.org. This week's show is number 1191. Fighting cancer can be as painful as the disease itself. Radiation, chemotherapy, and other aggressive treatments can leave a patient in intense pain, battling nausea, fatigue, and loss of appetite. Medical marijuana is hailed as one answer, but it's an answer many states aren't willing to embrace. For people with low incomes or without health insurance, accepted treatment to alleviate these side effects is often unaffordable. In Oakland, California, low-income women with cancer can turn to free, traditional medicine as an alternative. Catherine Mills visits the nonprofit Charlotte Maxwell Complementary Clinic in downtown Oakland. There, she gets free, natural treatment to counteract the effects of the chemotherapy she receives at a local hospital. The clinic offers women an integrative approach to treatment that combines holistic medicine with Western medicine.
Hi, it's Catherine Mills again. I'm on my way up.
Okay, sounds good.
Catherine Mills is on her way to what she likes to call her spa.
And I'm on my way up to my favorite place to get my treatment for today.
Catherine's favorite place is also known as the Charlotte Maxwell Clinic. It's a nonprofit that provides free complementary medicine to low-income women with cancer.
I just can't wait to talk to the herbalist about improving my herbs.
This is not like the hospital where Catherine spends many of her weekdays receiving chemotherapy for ovarian cancer. The idea at this clinic is to support women while they receive traditional cancer treatment. It's called an integrative approach, combining holistic medicine with traditional Western medicine.
They're going to have one-on-one sessions for 50 minutes with an acupuncturist or a massage therapist. That's unheard of when you're going through cancer treatment at the county facility.
That's Krista Alderson, the executive director of Charlotte Maxwell.
We're providing alternative medicine treatments to support women through radiation, chemo, and surgery to deal with the side effects of cancer treatment.
Alderson says most of the women here are referred from county hospitals.
We also have a free food pantry. We have exercise classes and yoga classes.
And Chinese herbs, homeopathy, therapeutic imagery.
They're getting one-on-one, hands-on care. It's very stress-reducing. What our clients report is that after they get diagnosed with cancer, people stop touching them. Their families are afraid to touch them, and they don't often get touched in a therapeutic way at the hospital.
So Charlotte Maxwell makes sure women get that extra healing touch. Again, here's Catherine Mills.
I receive acupuncture, I receive Reiki, I receive You name it. Whatever they offer, I get.
Patient Catherine Mills is 55 years old and has been coming here since she was diagnosed with breast, ovarian, and thyroid cancer.
They immediately got me in, and I don't know what I would do without them. I mean, coming here is very, very supportive for me. The treatments they offer, the care, I mean, the love that they give us, it's awesome.
Mills says it has really lifted her spirits, which were in the dumps after she lost her job along with her health care, something she has in common with many of the women at the clinic.
Well, the women that we serve have always been isolated by poverty and disease, coming from communities that lack resources, that might be fragmented by poverty or by crime.
Director Alderson says that 70% of the women at the clinic are living at the federal poverty line or below it.
65% of the women we serve have advanced cancers. Now, why is that? It has to be something to do with the fact that they don't have access to care. They lack resources.
The clinic itself has experienced a lack of resources since the economic downturn.
We get funded from private foundations and from private donors. It used to be that the majority of our funding came through foundations, but with the recession and the competition for funds, that is no longer true. The majority of our funding is now starting to come from our donor base.
And yet, the number of new clients has doubled each year since the recession. Alderson says when government institutions fail, people turn to nonprofits for support.
It is possible for our communities to take care of one another and each other when other systems, government systems are falling apart.
And Charlotte Maxwell has done just that. When it opened in 1991, the clinic had just 10 clients. Now they serve 750 women, all with volunteers.
I'm blessed to have Charlotte Maxwell in my life, and whatever I can help them with, I'm there for them.
Catherine Mills is one of those 750 women. Even though she suffers from multiple cancers and a complicated diagnosis, at Charlotte Maxwell, she has a place of refuge. For Cross Currents, I'm Madeline Fowler.
Cross Currents is a daily news program produced by KALW in the San Francisco Bay Area. And finally, a trip back in time with Gilles Malkin, a chance to meet a woman who was a champion of the immigrants who flocked to America in the Industrial Revolution. And we'll find out why Jane Addams' pro-peace stance got her in hot water.
Laura Jane Addams was born in Cedarville, Illinois in 1860, a time when the change from farming to industry was surging. More than 10 million West Europeans were immigrating to America. Her father was State Senator John H. Adams, a man who believed in direct personal involvement with public circumstances, a friend of Abraham Lincoln, and the person who was to be Jane's inspiration for what became a life of activism for social improvement, and more particularly for the well-being of Chicago's immigrants and their children. As a small child, Jane Addams was stricken with Pott's disease, or tubercular spondylitis, an affliction of the vertebrae and discs that affected her health for the rest of her life. Nevertheless, once she set the course for her priorities, nothing would deter her from following it. Jane was in London, England in 1887 when she had occasion to visit Toynbee Hall, a shelter for the poor. She and her college classmate Ellen Gates Starr decided to open a similar shelter for the immigrant families in Chicago, and so Hull House, in the near West Side District of Chicago, was born. They raised money, recruited helpers and investors, and leased a building in which they cared for the children and the sick among the indigent families. Hull House became the model for hundreds of other settlement houses all over America. But the quest didn't stop at housing or immediate help. The purpose was also to hold cultural events of all types, so that not only could those who were homesick get together, but all others who wished to attend could learn and interact with people from other lands and cultures. They went all the way. It became an archetypal welcome gateway for the immigrant to American life. They established not only a public kitchen and a jobs office, but also classes for children and for adults in many different subjects and crafts, clubs, lectures, an art gallery and studio, a printing shop, free concerts, a library, and other useful social means of interaction. Jane Addams' humanitarian interests and accomplishments seemed to have no end. She was on the Chicago Board of Education and headed up their school management committee. She helped to found the Chicago School of Civics and became the first female president of the National Conference of Charities and Corrections. She was a charter member of the NAACP and a founding member of the ACLU, and the first woman to be granted an honorary degree from Yale University. Her hard work forced an examination of working conditions, hours and wages, and child education, making groundbreaking improvements in the conditions for all workers. But she had another pet peeve, something she could not stomach, and worked to oppose and eradicate, and that was war. It may be a pessimist's point of view about the melting pot aspect of America that since the world is made up of warring neighbors of every scale, it would follow that the American populace would exemplify that very same character, and that fighting between ethnicities would be the rule rather than the making of peace based upon the idea that if we're all in the same boat and you shake one end, you're going to rock the other. Instead, one might hope, as Jane Addams did, that the character of the nation would evolve similarly to the stages of human life, which gains wisdom with age. She claimed that local government should include the knowledge and experience of its immigrants, rather than trying to remold them into industrial robots. The idea for peace, she said, was the gradual development of the moral substitutes for war. In her 1907 book, Newer Ideals of Peace, Addams wrote a remarkable approach to solving the problem of perpetual war, namely to employ active and dynamic methods of pursuing peace. In fact, her point was that life geared to the pursuit of peace would be much more exciting, stimulating, inspiring, glorious, not to mention rewarding, than a life geared to the perpetuation of war. In the same way that in the more mature human stages, life is wider, deeper, and more meaningful. She said that a world without war did not have to be a remote vision, but rather is a possible definitive process to be implemented here and now. Because she came out against war, this great woman of uncommon perception, immense compassion, and utter dedication to the well-being of everyone was vilified in the press, expelled from the DAR, and accused of being anti-American. But what could be more American than the faith that anything is possible? Meanwhile, she served as the first president of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom and vice president of the National American Women's Suffrage Association, and in an effort to avert World War I, she presided over the Women's Peace Party and the International Congress of Women, at which women from all over the world met in Europe. In December of 1931, she was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for having worked assiduously and for many years to revive the ideal of peace and to rekindle the spirit of peace in her own nation and in the whole of mankind. My favorite quote from her is, "Fortunately, life is much bigger and finer than our theories about it." She died in 1935. Thank you for listening. For 51% and Women in History, I'm Gilles Malkin.
Gilles Malkin is a writer and musician. He lives in New York's Catskill Mountains region. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our theme music is by Kevin Bartlett. If you'd like to hear this show again or visit the 51% archives, go to our website at wamc.org. You can also find a regular column related to 51% at feminist.com. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another edition of 51%, The Women's Perspective.